The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. This is Judge Peach. I'm appearing remotely, and I'm joined by Judge Lauer and Judge Jakewith, who are also appearing remotely. Counsel in this case are also appearing remotely. We are here to consider arguments in the matter of Everett W. Cook versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 20-6853. Will counsel, beginning with appellate's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
My name is Chris Attig. I'm appearing on behalf of the veteran Everett Cook, and I'm joined by my co-counsel, Alexandra Curran.
William Hornbeck, appearing for the Secretary, and I'm joined by my co-counsel, Dustin Elias.
Thank you, and I understand appellate's counsel would like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Okay, if counsel are ready, then let's begin with appellate's counsel, Mr. Attig.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The board erred when it did not provide a general statement, number 7104 D2A, reflecting whether evidence was not considered because it was received at a time not permitted under 7113C. Mr. Cook argues there are two reasons why the board erred in this respect. First, the board did not identify which evidence it did not consider. And second, the board failed to explain why that evidence was not permitted under 7113C. Resolving this issue necessarily requires the court to consider what 7113C permits. 7113C, at least as it pertains to evidence laying appeals, provides two ways that veterans can submit evidence to the board to be considered as part of the record. Under 7113C2B, evidence that's received on the same day as the form falls within the 90 days following the receipt of the NOD and therefore would be submitted under C2B. Under C2A, evidence submitted with the NOD is the second way that a veteran can put evidence into the record. What that means is a little less clear because the word with is susceptible to dozens of different meanings. This does not create an ambiguity from Mr. Cook's perspective. We believe that it gives the court and ultimately the board clarity of congressional intent of how to address this situation. If I could provide four scenarios to the court, which I think illustrate the versatility of this language. And the first scenario is the cleanest scenario that could possibly occur. A veteran has a deadline to appeal, so he takes his form, his 10-182, selecting the evidence lane. He takes his evidence down to the post office, puts it all in the same box, tapes it up, puts postage on it, and sends it certified mail to the VA. Because it's all in the same box, it gets there at the same time. Because that evidence is submitted on the same day as the notice of disagreement form, it's submitted within 90 days following the date of the form and therefore would be considered submitted under C2B. It also could be considered submitted under C2A because under that meaning of with the notice of disagreement, the evidence physically appeared with the form. Let me tweak that scenario a little bit and look at a second slightly adjusted scenario. The veteran takes his evidence down to the post office, boxes it all up, puts the tape on it, puts the certified mail on it, puts it in the mail delivery, sees it going on the truck to the VA, heads back to his house, takes a deep sigh of relief, and notices that he's left the 10-182 form on his kitchen counter. He races back down to the post office, puts it in a separate envelope, sends it off to the VA the same day. Because of the exigencies of mailing, the evidence arrives at the BVA first. Now, clearly, because the evidence arrives there first before the form, under C2B, the board could not consider that evidence because it's not submitted within 90 days following the receipt of the notice of disagreement. But the question is begged. In that scenario, is evidence that served on the same day and in the same manner, i.e. on the same day through the mail, but received on different days, considered with the notice of disagreement under 7113C2A? A slightly adjusted scenario, a third scenario, evidence is This requires going outside the record a little bit because we have an updated version of the Form 10-182 in March of 2022, and that form specifically states on it that a veteran must mail the form, the 10-182 form, to the BVA. It does not provide in the instructions, it does not provide, as in this case, a fax option. But there's no limit in that form as to whether a veteran can fax evidence. And so a veteran reading those instructions would say, I'm going to take my form, I'm going to put it in the mail, put my stamp on it, certified mail, all set, it's off to the VA. And then to save money, or for whatever reason, faxes in their evidence to the board. Now, again, under C2B, the board couldn't consider that evidence because the evidence got there first. It got there before the notice of disagreement, and under C2B, it's only permitted to be considered if it's received within 90 days following the receipt of the, if it's submitted within 90 days following receipt of the notice of disagreement form. But again, the question is begged. Is evidence served on the same day, but in a different manner, fax versus mail, is that considered with the notice of disagreement under C2A? And this case provides a fourth scenario. In this case, the veteran received a ratings decision in June of 2019. In July of 2019, the veteran submitted lay evidence and medical evidence, and in September of 2019, submitted medical opinion evidence. In October of 2019, the veteran submitted their notice of disagreement form, selecting the evidence laying on a 10-182 form. At the time that this happened, the veteran only had one appeal filed within the window of time, within a year of either side of this, to my knowledge. I don't know since then because that's not part of our record. But if you look in the record, there's no evidence that there was any other appeal pending. The issues in the ratings decision were clear. It was a denial of service connection for headaches, sinusitis, and diabetes, and a denial of a compensable rating for rhinitis. All of the evidence, the lay evidence, the medical evidence, and the medical opinion evidence was clearly and facially relevant to that one appeal. And so the question arises, under C2A, is evidence that's on its face relevant to the only issues in the only appeal filed with the BVA considered to be with the notice of disagreement under C2A? Under any of the various definitions of the word with, an argument could be persuasively made that those, that evidence and that form, they were submitted with the notice of disagreement form. And so we can take two things from that exercise. First, the question of the timeliness of an appeal, and more importantly to this case, the question of the scope of the record, is a question of fact for the board to address. The second thing that we can take is that the phrase with the nod, as it appears in 7113 C2A, is a very versatile phrase. And we believe that Congress intended this versatility. It said in one of the Senate committees that's quoted in the opening brief, and I believe also in our supplemental brief, it said that Congress expected the VA to develop, quote, robust policies for addressing new evidence during timeframes not contemplated, close quote, by the AMA framework. Congress wanted to maintain the veteran-friendly nature of the system. Congress wanted the BVA to have the flexibility to deal with situations that Congress may never have considered, they may not have been aware of, or that may arise later, where evidence could be submitted before the form and still be considered with, filed with.
Mr. Attic, that may be true, but isn't the fact that Congress wanted, if it indeed is a fact, wanted VA to establish that flexibility and acknowledgement that they had not done so in the statute itself?
I don't think it is reflected. I think when you read, respectfully, Your Honor, when you read 7104D2A together with this, you see that Congress wanted the BVA to provide a statement saying what evidence it was considering, and more specifically, when it's not considering evidence out because it's submitted outside that time. And that necessarily implies two things. It implies that the VA should identify what evidence it isn't considering, and that also necessarily implies that the VA should explain why it's not permitted. And I think it's that explanation, that statement reflecting evidence not considered, that opens the door to allow the board to weigh as a matter of fact whether or not evidence that's filed before the notice of disagreement can be considered under the circumstances of that unique case to have been filed with the notice of disagreement.
But when you read the evidence submitted clause, if you will, with either of the two verbs in the regulation, include and consider, isn't it apparent that the with refers to the timing? The record includes evidence submitted with the NOD, or the board shall consider evidence submitted with the NOD?
Certainly, we believe that one interpretation of the word with in that context would be a timing meaning, that you could construe it to mean timing. But I don't think that the language, in my read of the language, my understanding of the purpose of the statute, the text of the statute, and the history is that Congress did not appear to limit that necessarily. So while I understand that one interpretation of that could be that with is a timing mechanism, and in considered with in conjunction with those two words, it could be in that particular fact scenario could be more of a timing concern. But I also think that that doesn't necessarily exclude the consideration of considering evidence that's included with the notice of disagreement. Just because it's filed 2 days before the form does not necessarily mean it's not filed with the notice of disagreement if the facts in that particular case suggest that. I'm not sure if that was responsive to your question, Your Honor. I don't know that I...
Yes, it was. But wouldn't the construction you urge reduce with to and? Or, as you express in the briefing, as well as the board shall consider evidence submitted and the NOD, or as well as the NOD. That doesn't make any sense, does it?
Well, I think that we could look at any language that Congress puts out there, and I was about to make a joke about the literary skills of certain congressional representatives, and I probably should stop at this point, but I think that we can all suggest that there probably are ways that Congress could write every statute better. And so the job of the court is not to figure that out, though. And in fact, I think that there are ways that, for example, it has always concerned me, although I can't understand the implications of this, that 7113 talks about evidence being submitted, but 7104 talks about evidence being received within the time periods of submission. It seems that there is some sort of incongruence, if I could invent a word or use a word inappropriately, there's some sort of incongruence between those two statutes. But I don't think that that means that the evidence should not be considered just because it was not submitted at the exact same time as the form. That seems to cut against exactly what Congress was trying to avoid when they created AMA. We had this system under legacy where it was open-ended. A veteran could submit evidence up until the minute that the board judge released the decision, and it was still part of the record. And in fact, advocates and veterans alike both used the court system to pry back open the record to consider that evidence. And it became unsustainable, as it were, to be able to have this system where evidence can continuously come in. I think with a narrow interpretation that says that evidence must be submitted at the same exact time and in the same exact manner and received in the same exact time and manner in order to be considered by the board, I think this goes to the other extreme. And I think that shows that that's not what Congress intended. They wanted these robust policies to be developed to address evidence submitted outside of the time frames not contemplated by the specific words.
Well, I have two questions related to that in your arguments. You make some appealing arguments about that are related to the vagaries of the transmission mode. And, you know, it would be a different discussion, I think, if what we were talking about here was evidence submitted a day that was arrived a day later or a day before, or, you know, the first three examples that you described. But those aren't the circumstances presented here, are they? We're talking about lay evidence submitted 3 months before the appeal was filed and medical opinion submitted a month before. They clearly weren't tried to be, there was no attempt to transmit them simultaneously that was frustrated by a common carrier. They were just submitted separately. So I'm not sure that I'm not understanding how the examples that you gave encompass this case.
And respectfully, Your Honor, I think you and I and the court and myself and Mr. Cook might all have different perspectives on a set of factual circumstances, whether or not that factual set is with the notice of disagreement, as it were. We could look at these factual scenarios and say, well, the first one that I gave is very clearly with. The last one I gave is less clear. But I think that they're all factual scenarios that the board should address. And that's what I think ultimately to be able to get this court in a position to do to fulfill its judicial review role, the board needs to take that position and needs to explain, as a matter of fact, what evidence it's not considering And then secondarily, why it's not considering that? Why is it not permitted under 7113C? There are, as we know, there are probably facts related to this inquiry that are not in the record. We don't know specifically why this was submitted in this order. I can envision circumstances that could explain that, but I don't want to hypothesize and speculate about facts that aren't in the record. But I could say that there are plenty of veterans who know that they're about to pass away and want to make sure that evidence is in the file for their survivor's appeal. They may fax it in. They may not pass away for 1, 2, 5 months later, but they want that evidence to be available to the board to consider. And I think in that situation, the board should be able to look at that fact scenario and say, we have this evidence submitted 3 months before the notice of disagreement form. Here's all the factors surrounding it. Maybe there was another supplemental claim that pertained to another issue and that it's unclear whether that evidence was submitted with the supplemental claim or with the notice of disagreement. And the board can articulate that as a matter of fact that the court can then review for clear error. The method that we're proposing puts the court in the driver's seat of judicial review, and it puts the court in a position to be able to tell the board, listen, we're not going to tell you exactly which meaning of with Congress intended. We understand that Congress intended you to develop this robust policy for addressing evidence outside these frameworks, but we want you to make findings of fact under that 7104D2A section explaining why that's not to be considered so that we can then review that and determine if that's clearly erroneous, as it were, as a factual matter. And so I guess
didn't our court already consider the fixed window for the submission of evidence in Aviles just in May and hold that the evidentiary record restriction is not an unfair flaw in the new review process, but an intended feature of that process designed to reduce what has been identified as a key inefficiency in legacy appeals, the continuous cycle of evidence gathering and re-adjudication of the same claim?
We don't dispute, Your Honor, that AMA created these windows. We don't dispute them, and in certain cases, the windows are more clear than others. What we're here is a situation where we don't think the windows, the frame for this particular window, when it opens and when it closes, is very clear. And so that's why we're seeking that clarification. We don't dispute that, as a matter of fact, the board should determine whether or not this evidence was submitted within that permissible window. That's the structure that Congress gave to us. That's the structure we're working with. But we want the clarity to be able to understand is what happens in these situations in the course of normal life where evidence is submitted before the notice of disagreement as a fairly routine matter. In many cases, you might see advocates that submit evidence in because they want that evidence in the record and available to the board in the event that maybe they withdraw from the case. Maybe the advocate passes away. Maybe, as recently happened in one of our cases, the expert passes away, and we want that evidence to be available at that time. And so there's a whole variety of reasons why that evidence might get there before the form. And so that's the question that this appeal kind of tightly frames is that window of evidence that the board can consider defined by the pairing of the evidence in the form and making sure that they come at the exact same time? Or is there a latitude for the board to consider scenarios where the evidence might be pre-filed? The evidence might arrive even not being pre-filed, just filed at the same time or submitted or served at the same time. It might arrive at a different time at the board. And in those circumstances, is there latitude under the AMA for the board to be able to say, this makes sense, these documents are submitted with the notice of disagreement and we're going to consider them? And conversely, to be able to say, for these factual reasons, they were not submitted. But to explain it either way, that way the advocate has an understanding. And if there's no advocate, the veteran has an understanding. In this case, one of the key harms is that the veteran did not learn, even though he was represented by counsel, he did not learn until the board issued its decision that evidence was not going to be considered. He never had any clue what evidence would be, was not considered, because the board mischaracterized it. It said, we're not considering the evidence submitted after following that 90th day. Well, no evidence was even attempted to be submitted in that time frame. So the veteran and large part, their counsel would look at that and say, well, there's no evidence. This appears to be board boilerplate in the document that may have just been left over from a prior decision. Or maybe it means something, but the advocate or the veteran doesn't know what to do with it. So that's ultimately what we're asking for here. It's not for the court to take a position and say exactly when those windows open and close, but to remind the board that it has that latitude and should address it under 7104 D2A by providing that statement that reflects whether or not evidence was considered because it wasn't submitted within the timeframes provided under 7113C.
How do we get, again, perhaps I missed this, but how do we get to the expansive reading of 7113D that's needed to permit the flexibility that you seek?
Well, I think the foundation of our argument, Your Honor, is that the board erred when it didn't provide that general statement under 7104D2A. And that's under that statute, the board is required to provide a general statement reflecting whether evidence was not considered because it was received at a time not permitted under 7113. And that begs the question, what does it mean to be permitted under 7113? What are those windows and how are they evaluated, determined, defined, as it were? So the court in a statutory construction scenario would come in and look at 7113 and take Chevron step one and Chevron step two and analyze and say, this is what Congress meant. First, by looking at the text, purpose, history, and the canons of construction. If an ambiguity remained, they could move on to step two and then evaluate our deference, Skidmore deference, and the pro-veteran canon. I see that my time is about to run out, and if there's further questions, I'm happy to answer them. I'd like to reserve the rest for rebuttal, though.
Let's add another 5 minutes to your time. Thank you. Judge Jenkins, do you have any further questions?
I do, but I'll yield to you, Judge Peach, or Judge Lauer, if you have some.
Yes, I have some questions. I have a question. Counsel, what you're generally saying is that any evidence submitted after the the decision was rendered at the regional office to the time, which is 90 days after the NOD is filed. So is that the window? Is that your window? It's a pretty big window.
Your Honor, respectfully, that's. I think we might have said that in our opening brief, and if I could reverse the hands of time and go back and clarify that statement in my opening brief, I think we'd have a more tighter explanation. I don't mean to argue that Mr. Cook thinks that every piece of evidence that appears in VBMS or case flow between the date of the ratings decision and that 90th day following the submission of the nod. I don't think he means to say that he doesn't mean to say that all of that evidence should be considered. What he's saying is that the board should look at the evidence that's submitted before the notice of disagreement form and evaluate whether it falls within the meaning of C2A. Does it fall within the meaning of evidence submitted with the notice of disagreement? I can give you an example that's a little bit more challenging and probably cuts against me in a future case, but if a veteran, for example, in this case, had a supplemental claim at the same time, arguing service connection for, maybe a neuropathy, and he included in that supplemental claim evidence supportive of the, nexus of diabetes, I think there's a clear question that the board would have to confront is, was that evidence filed with the notice of disagreement, or was it filed with the supplemental claim? And I think that's the sort of thing that the board should be grappling with to be able to give that opportunity to the veteran. Of course, with the clear notice of what they're not considering, give them an opportunity to resubmit that in a supplemental claim if that's what was intended. So I think there will be scenarios that arise where veterans submit evidence prior to the filing of the nod. The board will look at it and say, we're not asking the board to look at every single piece of evidence that appears in the file. We're asking the board to look at that evidence and determine whether or not under D2A, 7104D2A, it is within the time permitted by 7113C. And that necessarily includes a question, is this with the nod, or was it with something else, or was it not at all with the notice of disagreement? I think that's what we're asking, Your Honor.
And that's what you feel the board should have made a finding of fact on that?
I don't know that they need to make a finding of fact, Your Honor. And this is another part I grappled with a little bit. But 7104D, you know, D1 starts out with this concept of the adequate reasons and bases. And D2 talks about this general statement. The general statement seems to be accepted from the reasons and bases requirement. But I think that even that basic general statement called for by D2A, simply saying we did not consider the facts you submitted on September 5th, 2019, or we did not consider the medical opinion from Dr. Sesta from September 2019 because it was submitted prior to the date of the notice of disagreement. I believe that that's a sufficient general statement from the board that would allow this court to come in and review whether or not the court has properly applied that statute on an as-applied basis rather than interpreting this statute and reinterpreting it every time there's a different variation on the word with.
And so it's your opinion that that general statement is defective?
In this case, yes, Your Honor. In this case, it's defective for two reasons. First of all, the board did not identify any evidence it didn't consider. The second reason that it's problematic is because in this case, the board said it wasn't considering, very vaguely said it wasn't considering evidence because that evidence was filed following the 90th day. And no evidence was filed at that time. So the general statement in this case is defective in the sense that we don't know what evidence they didn't consider. We also don't know why they didn't consider. And so we're here filing this appeal and making this argument, kind of guessing at why the board thinks, as a matter of fact, that the record was closed and did not include this evidence that was filed before the notice of disagreement.
But let's go ahead and add another 5 minutes to the Council. So how would you tell us how you were prejudiced by it in light of the fact that there were instructions that you could file a supplemental claim?
Well, Mr. Cook could have filed a supplemental claim, but the question is with what? Since he doesn't know what evidence wasn't considered, the best that he would do to protect his rights would be to file the entire claims file again with a supplemental claim. And there what we have is, you know, legacy 2.0, you know, where veterans simply continue to submit evidence and continue to blow these files out of size, out of proportion, have duplicate filings, duplicate pieces of evidence. It takes away clarity from the system. It also takes away the VA's ability to really get into this claim and understand what's going on if it's got to spend the first 2 weeks of every claim sorting out the duplicates. So that's how Mr. Cook was prejudiced in this case, is that he didn't know what evidence to submit in a supplemental claim. He didn't know which claim it pertained to. He didn't know any of that information. All that he knew is that the board didn't consider something that he didn't submit.
Decision, when you received the decision, wouldn't it have been pretty clear what evidence wasn't considered?
It's certainly more clear in this case than in others. And that's the concern, is that it's still a guess for Mr. Cook. It's still a guess for his attorney. And what we're trying in this AMA system to do is we're trying to find clarity and we're trying to find expedited ways of moving things. And to tell a veteran to say, here you go, Mr. Veteran, why don't you go ahead and guess what evidence was not considered? Guess why it's not. Guess which claim it pertains to. File a supplemental claim. And what's going to happen at that point is in an ideal world, the AOJ would consider that evidence, issue a new decision, but it's more highly likely that they would issue some sort of decision finding that certain pieces of it are not new and relevant. And then he would have to go through an appeals process through to the board again, through possibly to the court to determine, is this new and relevant? There's a lot of unanswered questions as to what new and relevant means under AMA versus new and material under legacy. And so this veteran is in a situation where he's advanced in age, he's probably going to pass away before these appeals are resolved, and he has to start over with a new supplemental claim that he doesn't even know if he's submitting the evidence the board didn't consider. It's an entire guess. And certainly in this case, he has a better chance of guessing right. But the VA claim system is not meant to be traps, and it's not meant to be guesswork either. And some sort of clarity from the board would have allowed us to eliminate that in either direction, either the clarity of saying what evidence wasn't considered and why wasn't it considered, so that we could have a more clear argument to this court, or to say this is the evidence that wasn't considered so that he could have then filed a supplemental claim. Now, another piece of that too, Your Honor, is in this case he was fairly lucky in that he got the board decision before that 1 year to file the supplemental claim expired, and I believe it was just a matter of days. That is not the case traditionally. The board continues to take a long period of time, and in many cases, they're going to be telling the veteran what it wasn't considered, or, as in this case, providing a vague statement that something wasn't considered, and that a veteran is out of time to file that supplemental claim. There's no reasonably prompt notice from the board. And so we're not asking the court to cure that error. I don't think that that's framed or even, you know, appropriate for the court to reach that yet. But we do argue that that's part of the prejudice that this veteran experienced, is that the procedure would have been different but for the board's failure to provide that statement under D2A. And that is one clear way that the Federal Circuit has told us that there's a finding of prejudicial error, is that the procedure or the outcome would have been different but for the board's error.
Thank you. Judge, let me see what we've got here. Okay, are there any other questions? Judge Lauer?
Question, Judge Peach. Mr. Attic, I want to go back to the general statement and the requirement under that. Doesn't it actually bolster the 7113 interpretation, because it's clear that Congress is reiterating its understanding that the board will not review certain evidence? In other words, you know, 7104 actually bolsters that in saying it's clear that certain evidence won't be required in that general and that requirement.
I think to a certain degree, Your Honor, you're correct. Is that what Congress was doing there was saying that we really are emphasizing the fact that there are going to be windows in the evidence and in the hearing lane, that there's going to be windows of time and that you have to comply with them. But they also wanted to create that flexibility to be able to say, we can't envision every possible scenario and every permutation where evidence and a form could arrive with a notice of disagreement or without or in a different sequence. Or if it's a hearing, I don't want to go into the hearing because that isn't the issue in this case. But if evidence is submitted at a hearing or not submitted at a hearing, I think that same question exists, and Congress left that flexibility. So to an extent, yes, Your Honor, it did reinforce the idea that the AMA is designed around this concept of windows for these lanes. But I think that it also reinforced the concept that it wanted it to be a veteran-friendly system that wasn't going to go to the other extreme of legacy and say, now, instead of having everything be in the record until the very last second, nothing will be in the record unless it's submitted in the exact perfect way that this statute seems to imply on a very superficial reading of the statute.
And my other question is regarding specific language in 7104. I know that you've suggested that there should be more specificity under 7104D2, but in reality, the language, the text there, just requires two things, right? For the VA to notify the claimant that evidence was not considered because it was received at a time outside the window, and the options, and the Secretary's position here, as you know from the briefing as well as the supplemental memo, is that it met the bare requirements. What's your response to that, Mr. Attic?
In this case, Your Honor, the board statement did not meet those bare requirements because the board mischaracterized the evidence that was at issue and said it was filed after the 90 days. So it didn't even state the correct reason why it wasn't considered under 7113. But we believe that a general statement, while it doesn't need to be any sort of legal, you know, thesis or anything along those lines, a simple statement from the board saying we did not consider this piece of evidence and identify it and telling the veteran why they didn't in a simple statement because it was submitted 90 days before the nod, that leaves open for interpretation whether the board was right or wrong, but at least they're giving the veteran notice. They're telling the veteran what was and what was not considered. That clarity is vital for two reasons. It's vital so that the veteran can make a more cogent appeal to the court if they disagree with the board's determination, but that clarity is also vital if they choose to file a supplemental claim instead to know what evidence they are going to be submitting. In this case, as was discussed earlier, the guess is a little bit easier, but there's still no guarantee that the guess would have been right. Had the veteran made it, he may have decided that something else was what, you know, his understanding that some other piece of evidence was submitted because he had a misunderstanding. He could have submitted the wrong evidence. So all we're asking in that D2A is clarity from the board. We're not asking for a very long didactic explanation supported by reasons and bases. just a simple statement that says, we did not consider X, Y, Z piece of evidence because, and here's the simple reason. And I think they can do that in a sentence in every situation.
Thank you.
Judge Jaquith, Judge Lauer, any further questions at this time?
Nearly all were answered during your questions, Judge Peach and Judge Lauer. But do we know whether the veteran filed a supplemental claim?
Your Honor, I don't have that answer. I will provide it after the oral argument, if the court wishes.
No further questions from me at this time. Thank you, Judge Peach.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, counsel. Secretary's counsel.
Thank you. Your Honor, and may it please the court. In Avila-Cervera, this court recognized the balance struck by Congress in the AMA between overall system efficiency and individual accommodation. As the court described, this system was designed to reduce inefficiency and the length of time required for appeals while preserving due process and reducing the hamster wheel of remands that had plagued the legacy system. We ask the court to again recognize the purpose of the AMA and to affirm the board's determination. So, as I stated, the primary evil that Congress was targeting in the AMA was the lengthy time and inefficiency of the legacy system. And part of the problem was what the court described in Avila-Cervera as the hamster wheel of remands, where there would be voluminous records submitted during the appeal before the board, and there would be a remand for the board's failure to address one or several pieces of this evidence, and it wouldn't yield the veteran any benefits on remand. Now, in the filing, in both the brief and the appellant's brief and appellant's response to the court's order, appellant suggested that the problem was late evidence and not evidence submitted between the AOJ and the board decision. But it was not simply late evidence. It was the volume of evidence and the requirements that evidence imposed on the board to address it, and the consequence of that was a remand that would not yield the veteran any benefits on remand. I do also want to clear something up from both the appellant submissions and from appellant's presentation today. The requirements for a supplemental claim and the effective date protection provisions for that. So under 3.2500, effective date protection is available for supplemental claims within a year, not just a year of the AOJ decision, but a year of the board decision, and if there's continuous pursuit, as there was here, a year of the court decision. And that was a somewhat novel feature of the AMA that is provided the veteran with a year from the board decision in this case to submit that supplemental claim, and would provide the veteran with a year from this any decision by the court, whether it's an affirmance or a remand, to submit that material in the supplemental claim. And certainly at this point, now the veteran appellant suggested that there was confusion in the 7104 statement as to what the evidence not considered was, but there was only one piece of evidence submitted in this case, and that was the 2019 private examination report. So not only was there no confusion from the 7104 statement in that respect, but there would be no confusion after a decision by this court.
Wait, that's not true, is it? There were, in July 2019, the veteran submitted his statement in support of claim and the statement of his sister in support of the claim. So that would also have been after the regional office decision in June and before the decision review notice went to the board in October.
Your Honor, I believe there is a distinction between evidence submitted by, so the 7113 refers to evidence submitted by the appellant and or his or her representative, as opposed to a statement or an argument. The distinction between the private examination report submitted and what was and the lay statement by the veteran himself, our reading of 7113 does not bar the submission or the consideration of a lay statement, but it was clear from the board's decision, both as to the 7104 statement and the evidence that was considered in the merits of the decision, it was clear that the missing piece of evidence that appellant sought to have considered and that the board did not consider is the private examination report.
Don't our cases make very clear that lay statements are evidence?
They are. Statements are evidence. But the reading, again, Secretary's reading of 7113 specifically, and this is not trying to create a sea change as to reasons of races generally. This is not trying to create a sea change as to evidence versus argument. It's simply that evidence submitted, because, again, this is the evidence submission lane, is that this is not something that's what. And regardless, again, setting aside that distinction for the moment, if the question is, there are two pieces of evidence that were submitted, and the veteran has to decide, well, which piece of evidence is it that's being referred, the burden on the veteran to submit both the lay statement and the private examination report in a supplemental claim is not this is not as burdensome as appellant would describe. Again, it's when the veteran was represented by counsel before the board, and the veteran's counsel submitted, as would very often be the case in a legacy claim, a piece of a private examination report along with the prior statements to contextualize what exactly the veteran was claiming, that was something that could easily be submitted in a supplemental claim and could be easily understood as being referred to in the 7104 statement.
Counsel, could I just ask for clarification before you go any further? Are you saying that lay statements are authorized to be submitted, but that the doctor's statement was not authorized to be submitted, even though let's say that they fell outside this window provided by the statute here?
Your Honor, our primary position is that it doesn't, regardless, the difference between evidence and argument. There is the AMA was not directed to arguments made before the board. Now, again, our primary position is, regardless of whether you consider the lay statements to be evidence or argument, the lay statements are still, it's a difference between one piece of evidence and two pieces of evidence. And if the veteran is describing the prejudice of having to decide which of the two pieces of evidence needs to be included in a supplemental claim, it's our position that that is not a prejudice that would yield any harm from the 7104 statement. Now, 7104 itself does not change the requirements of 7113. As the court noted in their ordering the responses, 7113 is where the lands come from to begin with. The question was 7104, and this is why it's D2 next to the traditional reasons or bases requirement, is for the board to provide reasons or bases as to evidence that came in with the untimely under 7113. So as appellant did correctly suggest, that 7104 and 7113 are linked in that 7104 D2 only exists because of the lanes created by 7113. And as Judge Laura notes, the existence of 7104 D2 and its phrasing does suggest that there are narrow windows. And as for appellant's suggestion that those windows are governed in a sense by subject matter, that what the board would have to do is consider untimely evidence and consider whether it is part of the same subject matter as the later submitted NOD, that requirement or that exception to the evidentiary windows does not appear anywhere in the text of the statute or in the implementing regulations, and we would ask that the court not read that extra requirement into either 7104 or 7113.
Mr. Hornbeck, if we look to the legislative history of Section 7113 to discern the most reasonable construction of the words of that statute, how does VA's interpretation of it to foreclose consideration of evidence submitted early measure up to Congress stressing that the limited window is not meant to alter the veteran-friendly nature of the claims and appeals process, and expecting VA to develop robust policies for addressing evidence submitted outside the specified time frame?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the Congress's goal was to create maintain a veteran-friendly system, but a system that does not provide the window sought by one veteran is not does not render a an otherwise veteran-friendly system unfriendly to veterans, because the primary evil that Congress sought to address in the AMA was the delay and the inefficiency. And the way they did that was, in a sense, to make the board more of an appellate court with all of the procedures that appellate court might have for receiving new evidence rather than considering the evidence that was before the AOJ. And the specific exceptions that the AMA carved out for submitting evidence during these discrete lanes was designed to preserve the veteran-friendly nature of the legacy system while eliminating the more veteran-unfriendly delays of the legacy system.
But if the board has evidence submitted early and is capable of considering it as part of its decision, how would that adversely affect the speedy adjudication of AMA claims? Doesn't it just impede the rapid resolution and add to the hamster wheel you wrote of in your briefing if veterans are forced to submit a supplemental claim and resubmit evidence the board could have easily considered in one single decision? What's more efficient about that?
Well, Your Honor, again, the efficiency is when the lanes work as created, when the evidence is submitted as described in 7113. And again, the AMA was designed to reduce the time that the appeals take. And part of what was so open-ended about the legacy system is that when evidence was submitted, it would prompt the board to either have to get a SSOC or get a waiver from the RO to address the evidence in the first place. All of these requirements caused by evidence submitted at any time between the AOJ decision and the board decision were what were throwing spanners in the works under the legacy system. And by creating these discrete windows, and it does create a system where if veterans submit evidence untimely, it requires the filing of a supplemental claim. It's true. It worked to the veterans' inconvenience in this specific case. But as to veterans overall, the increase in efficiency created by the AMA through its evidentiary windows is still achieved by reading 7113 the way Congress wrote it and the way that VA has interpreted it in the relevant regulation.
Does 7113 give the veteran a right to the 90-day submission window as the old 38 CFR 20.1304 did?
Are you referring to essentially the 90-day letter cases under legacy, where if the board jumps in early, it's? I don't know that the secretary has a position on that. I can give you a position after argument, but certainly in this case, the board gave the veteran the 90 days, and I imagine that in most, I've not seen an evidence case where the board decision came in prior to 90 days after the submission of the notice of disagreement. But I can give Your Honor a more official position after the argument, if that's acceptable. But
the difference looks to be that the 7113 formulation strips away the good cause exception to late filings. But setting that aside for a second, how can a veteran be deemed to have knowingly and intentionally waived the right to submit evidence within a 90-day window if no notice of what that right means or what it entails is given?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe it's a matter of waiver so much as the straightforward application of the 7113 evidentiary windows. It's by the submitting evidence within the 7113 system, within the AMA system, is governed by 7113, regardless of the requirements of 7104D2 or the hopes or intentions of the veteran, or in this case, the Veterans Council. The provision that Congress made, and this was part of what Your Honor identified earlier in Congress's expressed desire for an implementation of letting veterans know what to do with untimely submitted evidence, The idea was, again, for efficient claims resolution with the ultimate backstop that the court acknowledged in Avila Cervera to preserve due process of a supplemental claim that would be the primary means for the veteran to get that untimely submitted evidence in front of the board or in front of the agency. And in this case, I don't believe the veteran has submitted a supplemental claim, but again, the veteran would have up to a year from the court's decision, let alone the board's decision, to submit that supplemental claim with this evidence.
Is there any evidence in the record that VA provided the veteran with notice that he was limited to this 90-day window that began with the filing and ended with the expiration of the 90 days?
Yes, Your Honor. The VA, this is on page 197 of the RBA, which is, I believe, I don't remember the corresponding rote page, but in response to the notice of disagreement, the VA submitted or responded to the veteran describing the procedures for the evidence lane after the veteran did submit the evidence lane and said to the veteran, what happens next? You have 90 days from the date of the board's receipt of your board appeal to submit new evidence.
But that doesn't say anything about evidence that has been submitted before, nor does the form itself. 10-182, the veteran checks a block that says, I have additional evidence to submit or in support of my claim that I will provide within the next 90 days. But it doesn't give him any reason to realize that the evidence he's already submitted won't be considered, does it?
This iteration of the Form 10-182, it describes the lanes. It doesn't, I believe, have a statement as to the timing. But again, the timing requirements are from 7113 and not part of any notice requirement or reasons or basis requirement imposed on the board. The extent of the requirements that are imposed on the board to notify the veteran are stem from 7104D2. And again, as Your Honor asked, or as I believe Judge Lauer asked, the prejudice to the veteran of filing evidence out of the 7113 lanes is at the very worst the need to submit a supplemental claim with effective date protection. And again, this is sort of the interlocking pieces of the AMA as it was created, were to provide efficient resolution of veterans' claims while preserving due process and avoiding, as I stated, the problems that had plagued the legacy system. And so that's – the system operates independent of the statements in the Form 10-182 or other board responses to the veteran, but there have been responses to the veteran that would provide the notice that would be required under the AMA.
But we don't normally accept after the fact notice as satisfying due process requirements or our own fair process principles, do we?
No, Your Honor, but we also don't describe the veteran submitting evidence untimely as a failure of notice rather than a failure of complying with the requirements of the statute. Now, again, this is a change. This is a very large change, as appellant suggested, from the legacy system, and that was very much deliberate. The change from the wide open submission possibilities of the legacy system to the more tighter windows of the AMA, it was deliberate, but it was not intended in any way to prejudice or harm the veteran, because Congress created these backstops, most notably the supplemental claim, but also 7104D2, and the board, the VA has implemented further backstops in fleshing out the AMA system. In creating a system that is still veteran-friendly as to individual veterans while being greatly more – the idea is to be greatly more friendly to veterans as a whole by reducing the churn and reducing the lengthy delays that existed between AOJ and board decision under the legacy system.
Mr. Hornbeck, let me just clarify. Did you say that the requirement for a general statement is a notice requirement or is not
a
notice?
No, it is a reason as a basis requirement.
The standard then when reviewing that statement about the general statement is the same standard we use for reasons and bases?
Yes, Your Honor. You asked that in the supplemental, the request for supplemental briefing, and our position is that, yes, it should be governed. The statement, the requirements of 7104D2 are straightforward, and to review 7104D2 statements, the court can turn to existing reasons and basis of case law, but also the straightforward application of 7104D2 because, again, the language is fairly clear. I could quote it, but I don't want to read something that's,
You're referring to the requirements of what's to be contained in a general notice?
Yes. So the two primary requirements of the general statement, reflecting whether evidence was not considered in making the decision because the evidence was received at a time when not permitted under 7113, and part two, noting such options as may be available for having the evidence considered by VA. And that is what the board did here, notwithstanding their identification of the wrong time period, because they identified that evidence was submitted out of time, and the only evidence that could be referring to, with the possible exception of the lay statement, is the private examination report. And then the board proceeded to, in compliance with the second part of 7104D2, notify the veteran of how to get that evidence considered by VA, in this case with a supplemental claim, which it provided further instructions for at the end of its decision.
So when the board said, quote, the evidence was added to the claims file during a period when new evidence was not allowed, dash, after the 90 days following the election of evidence slain appeal. What evidence, could you surmise what evidence that was?
Everything after the dash is error, but it is not prejudicial error. It is, there was no, as far as I can tell, there was no evidence submitted after the 90 days. It was only the only untimely evidence was from prior to the submission of the NOD.
So it's a deficient notice in your mind, but not prejudicial.
I would characterize it more as reasons or bases than notice. And I would submit that there are any number of cases where this court evaluates the reasons or bases as a whole. I believe there's language in this court's case law to the effect that what's required is not perfection, but a reasonable explanation. McLean is the name of the case. A reasonable explanation of what the board was evaluating and how it came to its conclusions.
Thank you.
So is it the Secretary's position that regurgitation of the statutory language satisfies the general statement requirement, the meaningful notice requirement, as I would characterize it?
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't quite say simple regurgitation would suffice, but I would tend to push back on appellant's attempt to graft additional requirements onto what is supposed to be, after all, a general statement under 7104D2. And there are two elements required in the general statement, and when the board meets those two elements, that should be satisfactory under 7104D2.
It's not even regurgitation of the statutory language, because we have this particularly problematic situation where the board erroneously asserted that evidence was submitted late. But even the basic part is not even as detailed as the statute's boilerplate. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly the second half is giving more to the second requirement of the second half of the paragraph gives more than the second half of the 7104D2 would require, because it goes into greater detail about what is required in a supplemental claim. But if the answer is somewhere between where what the board did in this case and what appellant would. Appellant asked for a number of very specific requirements from a 7104D2 statement. Fax number, date of fax, sender of fax, all sorts of exotic requirements that appear nowhere in 7104D2 or any of its implementing regulations. And all that the secretary is asking for is a reasons or bases review based on, again, traditional notions of reasons or bases, but also the specific requirements of 7104D2. And if the court finds that those requirements unmet in this case, where there is only one piece of evidence submitted by the attorney and it's clear what is being referred to, whether it's one or possibly two pieces of evidence, that should be sufficient in this case. But whatever the court decides to, however the court decides to flesh out the standard of 7104D2, it should not graft requirements onto there that are found nowhere in the text of the statute or in the implementing regulations.
To follow up on that, how can very favorable evidence that VA actually puts in a veteran's claims file not be considered when VA must consider evidence that it only has constructive knowledge of and is only relevant and reasonably connected to a veteran's claim?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest the only difference here is timing. If there is, again, the duty to assist does not apply in the same way to the AMA. So there's not necessarily a question under the AMA of was there evidence from some private provider or even in the VAMC that was not added to the file for some reason. It's simply a matter of was the evidence submitted at a time when evidence could not be received, and if so, the plain text of the statute would exclude that evidence. And so, yes, there are doctrines of constructive possession and all sorts of ways for evidence to get before the board, although, again, AMA does not have the same duty to assist. But it's not – in this case, it was evidence that was simply submitted untimely, and the board addressed the untimely evidence in the manner required by the statute, and the court should affirm that.
Well, to carry the constructive knowledge analogy just a little farther, I guess I'd paraphrase Judge Allen's dissent in the decision of our court in Eusebio that the Federal Circuit reversed. How can a doctrine that allows the board to ignore evidence it knows it has and knows contains important information possibly be the outcome of a rational system of adjudication, especially one designed to be pro-veteran and not adversarial?
Well, Your Honor, the system, the pro-veteran system created by Congress in the AMA, or the system designed to be pro-veteran, was designed to allow, again, overall system efficiency while minimizing, as the court acknowledged in Avila-Cervera, avoiding any due process concerns and avoiding the and minimizing the churn and hamster wheel that had plagued the legacy system. And so you can create a system that, and you can create hypotheticals as appellant did, where there are seeming unfairnesses in a particular veteran's experience with the system, and it can still be a system that is pro-veteran overall. It can still be a system that works to the advantage of veterans, notwithstanding an individual veteran facing the consequence of having to file a supplemental claim with effective date protection, which is, again, the backstop that was undergirding so much of the system as a whole.
Doesn't your argument that, look, what we're really talking about here is one discrete piece of evidence, cut both ways? If it's one discrete piece of evidence and it's really important evidence for the veteran because it's the only evidence, as I recall from the record, that supports his claim, at least it provides pretty full-throated support of his claim, and it arrives less than a month before the decision request form. What's the problem? If if it's no problem for the veteran to figure it out when he gets erroneous notice, what's the problem for VA to consider it?
The problem, Your Honor, is that there's not a way to create that system that you're describing under the auspices of the AMA. And 7113 timing is 7113 timing, regardless of how tempting a piece of evidence is to look at. The nose in the camel's tent, so to speak, if you have such a case where it would be so tempting for the board to simply look at evidence that it has in its consideration. The AMA and the Congress's instructions in the AMA to avoid that temptation in setting up the system in 7113 is the reason that the board cannot give in to that temptation. And it's not as though the board would not want to, and if it were not barred by Congress and the AMA. In a hypothetical scenario, you could certainly create a scenario where the board would be very interested in doing this, but the system is designed to constrain both veterans submitting untimely evidence and the board considering it. I see that my time is expired. If people have further questions.
Are there any further questions, Judge Jaquith or Judge Lauer?
I have one, please, Judge Peach.
Then let's add five more minutes.
Mr. Hornbeck, as I understand it, the Secretary's position is that the board's misleading general statement is harmless. And that begs the question, doesn't a claimant being misled by such a statement impact the actual timing and content of future supplemental claims?
No, Your Honor. The timing and content of future supplemental claims would presumably be the evidence that was submitted and not considered by the board. If the board here is describing evidence that doesn't exist, in other words, evidence submitted after the 90 days, an appellant submitted evidence that was not considered and is under 7113, the evidence that was untimely under that period would be the evidence that would be need to be submitted in a supplemental claim. And as Judge Jaquith described it as very tempting evidence, the Secretary doesn't have a position on how compelling this particular evidence is, but the new and relevant evidence standard of the AMA has always, for supplemental claims, has been consistently interpreted as a lower bar than the new and material evidence standard of the legacy system. So if the submission is everything that the board didn't consider in the previous appeal, then that could only mean this exam and possibly, as we discussed earlier, the lay statement. But there's no confusion in, again, there might be a typical claim under legacy, or certainly not even barred by this, because you have the veteran has 90 days under the evidence lien, where a veteran might submit thousands of pages of evidence. And you might have a scenario in that case where you have to drill down to, okay, well, what could this be? And the veteran's guide in such a circumstance would still be 7113. 7104D2 is there as reasons or bases for the board to explain to the veteran and to the court on review. But 7113 provides what evidence should be excluded and why it should be excluded.
So a veteran should just assume that anything that could be construed as new and relevant that was provided to the agency between the AOJ decision and the filing of the NOD should be included in the supplemental claim. Is that the Secretary's position?
That is the Secretary's position. And again, in this case, the entirety of the evidence is the private examination opinion and possibly the lay statements.
But the Secretary's position extends to the timeline and exclusion is sufficiently rigid that if the physician assistant who conducted the unfavorable June 2019 examination said, oh, I've read the August 2019 examination of Dr. Sesta, I was wrong, and the September 2019 submission by the veteran includes both Dr. Sesta's examination and the physician assistant's recantation, VA's answer is, sorry, we can't help you. We cannot consider this evidence. File a supplemental claim.
Yes, Your Honor, in that the plain language of 7113C2 is limited to the evidentiary record, evidence submitted by the appellant and or her his or her representative. There are often references to other materials in materials that are before the AOJ even, but that does not alter the plain language of 7113.
Thank you, Judge Peach. I don't have any further questions.
Judge Lauer?
No further questions. Thank you.
Okay, and I have no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome. Thank you. And we'll now go back to Appellant's Counsel on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Secretary has conceded that the Board is required to provide reasons and bases for its failure to consider evidence under 7104D2A, and that in this case it did fail to provide adequate reasons and bases for that. The Secretary's argument is that it's not prejudicial because Mr. Cook could have just filed a supplemental claim. There are three types of evidence that were submitted involving four claims. In July of 2019, lay evidence was submitted from the veteran and from his sister, separate pieces of lay evidence. Those are at record 233 to record 238. There was medical evidence that was submitted at record 1588 to 1592, and there was opinion evidence from record 211 to record 226. Each of those pieces of evidence pertained to different aspects of four different claims: increased rating for rhinitis, service connection for sinusitis, service connection for headaches, and service connection for diabetes. Mr. Cook could not possibly fathom which claim to file a supplemental claim for and which evidence to include without simply resubmitting everything. And so the best and smartest course of action under the VA's interpretation of this statute is that any time a veteran submits evidence, that the board comes back at some point down the road and says that we didn't consider it, generally didn't consider evidence, everything should be resubmitted. To show you how that system might work in reality, and so far, and this is as of the VA statistics on their website, the VA has docketed apparently 28,000 AMA hearing appeals this year, fiscal year 2022 alone. If each of those claims include four different issues, then simply having the boards come out and say that we didn't consider evidence is going to lead to 112,000 supplemental claims, because Mr. Cook would have had to file a supplemental claim for sinusitis, a supplemental claim for headaches, a supplemental claim for an increased rating for rhinitis, and a supplemental claim for diabetes. And he would have resubmitted the full record in each of those claims. And so I simply don't understand how filing 112,000 supplemental claims creates a much more efficient system than adjudicating 28,000 appeals based on evidence that's filed. That simply is just not a rational interpretation of the statute. Coupled with the fact that the Secretary appears to be suggesting that lay evidence is somehow outside of the realm of 7113C, that appears nowhere in the statute. It appears nowhere in any regulation. It appears nowhere in the M21. I have not heard of that, and this is the first. I've been practicing veterans law since 2007, and I've never heard that before. And that's anecdotal and certainly outside the record and probably has little value. But it's a surprising statement that just shows the degree of confusion that's sewn into this process when the VA, without any basis in law, any basis in regulation, any basis in policy, decides that certain evidence can be submitted even if it's outside those windows, but doesn't tell the veteran what those windows are. And that's what happened in this case. Mr. Cook never knew what evidence was being considered and not considered, and he never knew why. In this case, at record 197, he was sent a letter after the notice of disagreement was filed. That notice of disagreement simply said you have 90 days from the date of the receipt of the BVA appeal to submit evidence. It says nothing about whether or not that evidence could be submitted before or after the notice of disagreement. Mr. Cook would have looked at that letter and said, got mine in early, I'm good. Haven't done that since math class in fifth grade. He moved on to the next thing. He never would have filed a supplemental claim. He could have looked at the 10-182 that currently exists in March of 22 version, which opposing counsel mentioned, and that form also does not mention that the evidence that's submitted within 90 days has to follow the receipt of the NOD. In fact, it says, quote, that they're going to consider evidence, quote, within the 90 days of the board's receipt of my VA form 10-182. That clearly implies that evidence submitted in the 90 days prior to that 10-182 is permissible. And so the VA, through every step of this process, whether it's the modern version, the current March 2022 version of 10-182, or the notices in this case, has left Mr. Cook in the wind wondering what evidence was not considered, which claims that evidence pertained to, and why it wasn't considered. The secretary concedes that the board got that wrong, but says it's not harmful because it seems to be more efficient under AMA to file four times as many claims rather than adjudicate one-fourth of the appeals. This is not a rational interpretation of this statute. A rational interpretation of this statute says that Congress wanted a system that shut down the hamster wheel of endless submission of evidence and said, we're creating windows, but we're not creating such rigid windows that they can't account for life and living. And so when a veteran submits something by fax and it gets there and it's evidence and it gets there before the form, 7113C2A provides a way for the board to say this was submitted with the notice of disagreement. It didn't come here physically with it, but it's clear from the context and it's clear from the facts that these two documents are coupled. That's what we're asking this court to do, is to inject common sense into this system, interpret 7113C and interpret 7104D2A to require the board to provide a general statement that explains what evidence was not considered and why. Subject to reasons and bases of review, as the secretary now concedes that it should be, that would give the opportunity for veterans to be able to discern whether or not they are able to make the case. And coupled with that, the notice that might come from that, if the BVA is to provide notice, even if it's in a decision that says, you know, we're going to go ahead and not consider Dr. Sesta's opinion in, you know, as it relates to your diabetes claim, but we're going to consider Dr. Sesta's opinion because it includes some sort of argument that's related to the rhinitis claim. That sort of information would be helpful too, and the board should be required to provide it. But simply all that we're asking this court to do is to find that the board erred because it did not give a general statement under 7104D2A that reflected whether evidence was not considered because it was received at a time not permitted under 7113. And we ask the court to find that under 7113C, particularly under C2, the evidence lane, evidence filed before the nod can be part of the record so long as the appellant can show that it was filed, quote, with the notice of disagreement. Unless there's further questions, I rest my client's case.
Any questions, Judge Lauer?
No, thank you.
Any Judge Jaquith?
No, thank you.
Okay. And I have no further questions either. So at this point, the court will take the case under consideration, and we have concluded the proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The court is in recess.